Take it away, Thomas.
All right. In its September meeting, the committee observed that IRIS-3 and IS-40 are not mutually exclusive. An entity acquiring an investment property should consider whether it meets the definition of a business as defined in Appendix A of IRIS-3. The committee also noted that the guidance in paragraphs 11 to 14 of IS-40 on ancillary services is intended to delineate an investment property from an owner-occupied property and not to delineate a business combination from the acquisition of a single asset. To avoid confusion, however, on the interrelation of IRIS-3 and IS-40, the committee directed the staff to analyze whether clarification can be made to IS-40 through the annual improvement process. We think that the most appropriate approach to clarify the interrelationship between both standards is to highlight that the accounting for such transaction requires an entity to exercise judgments wise. First, to determine whether a property qualifies as an investment property or owner-occupied property, and second, to determine whether the acquisition of an investment property is the acquisition of a single asset or a business combination in the scope of IRIS-3. Considering that the judgment required to determine whether a property qualifies as an investment property is addressed in paragraph 14 of IS-40, we recommend to add an additional paragraph 14A, who highlights the second instance for making judgment and making reference for this judgment to the guidance in IRIS-3. And this should be introduced by an annual improvement, which we have drafted in Appendix A to this agenda paper. With respect to the proposed annual improvements, the question arises whether it should be applied retrospectively or prospectively. We understand that applying the proposed amendment retrospectively may result in an entity applying IRIS-3 to transactions that have been accounted for in previous periods as the acquisition of a single asset, recognized at cost at acquisition date. Accordingly, the acquisition date fair value of several items recognized in accordance with IRIS-3 may not have been determined in previous periods. In this context, we are not so much concerned about the fair value of the investment properties itself at acquisition date. We are not so much concerned about that because at least the fair value of the acquired investment property at the next balance sheet date must have been determined, either for applying the fair value model for subsequent measurement of the investment property or for the disclosure requirements. Instead, we have in mind assets and liabilities that are only recognized under IRIS-3, for example, contingent liabilities or indemnification assets. Furthermore, the acquisition date fair value of contingent consideration may be another example of a fair value that may have not been determined in previous periods because of a different accounting policy for contingent consideration on the acquisition of a single asset. To avoid the use of hindsight in determining the acquisition date fair values of the identifiable assets acquired and the liabilities assumed as part of the business combination transaction, we think that the proposed amendment to IS-40 should be applied prospectively. So considering the results from the committee's discussion at the September 2011 meeting, our analysis of this issue and our assessment under the existing annual improvements criteria, we think that the committee should recommend to the board that the amendment proposed in Appendix A of the agenda paper should be included in the 2011 to 2013 annual improvement cycle. Accordingly, we want to ask the following questions to the committee. Does the committee agree to recommend to the board that it should amend IS-40 to clarify the interrelationship of IRIS-3 and IS-40 through the 2011 to 2013 annual improvement cycle? Second, does the committee agree to recommend to the board that the amendment should be applied prospectively? And third, does the committee agree to recommend to the board that it should adopt the text of the proposed amendment as shown in Appendix A of the agenda paper? And if not, what changes should be made.
Guido. Sorry that I have to say, I don't think that the proposed amendments will solve the divergence in practice. My understanding from where the divergence came from was not that in practice people falsely applied the guidance in paragraph 11 of IS 40 to delineate the acquisition of a business from that of single asset, but the problem was that people couldn't agree on whether ancillary services, insignificant ancillary services, as described in paragraph 11, would be enough for definition of a business, so would they meet the definition of processes that you need, which is included in the definition of a business. So even if we now tell people outside, you have two steps. The first one is owner-occupied investment property, and if you are investment property, then look in IFRS 3, that will not solve the divergence in practice, because people will still say, well, if it is investment property, you only have this ancillary services, not significant. Is that sufficient for having a business? From my point of view, that's the discussion that's going on in practice. So I don't think that that will help solving the divergence.
All right.
Picking up on Guido's point, I recall that at the last meeting, we said we would address whether the fact whether IS 40 was mutually exclusive with IFRS 3. So I recall that, and I understand that this is what the staff has tried to achieve, acknowledging that we will not solve the issue about identifying whether when you purchase an investment property with ancillary services, this is a business combination or this is the purchase of a single asset. So that second issue remains in my view. Now focusing on the first one and how you translated it into the papers. I don't like too much what you have done, because I believe that particularly with paragraph 14A, it pushes too much into concluding that purchases of investment property is likely to be a business combination. You put too much focus, in my view, that this can be a business combination. However, I found very good your suggestion to include a title, so I support the inclusion of the title in IS 40. I would not have paragraph 14A, but I would have basis for conclusions to explain that IS 40 and IFRS 3 are not mutually exclusive, in the same way as you do in BC 1, A and B, except that I don't like as well the last sentence of BC 1A, which says, consequently, in their view, the acquirer of a property with multiple tenants would offer security, requires one asset instead of imposts, applied a business combination, a business as specified in IFRS 3. Because when you have this and you read your BC 3, where you say the board agrees with proponents of the view presented in BC 1B that IFRS 3 and IS 40 are not mutually exclusive, it seems to conclude that the board does not agree with those who argue BC 1A, and so which I think we are leaving open the issue of whether when you purchase an investment property it's a business combination or just a purchase of a single asset. So my suggestion for the basis for conclusion would be to delete the last sentence of BC 1A and really simplify, not address the specific case of the purchase of a single investment property, but just clarifying basis for conclusion that IS 40 and IFRS 3 are not mutually exclusive.
Michael?
I just wanted to clarify, and I think, Laurence, you were saying the same thing, that last time we discussed this, there were two issues that were talked about. One was to do with when do you have a business? When you buy an investment property, when is it a business, when is it not a business? And the other was, are there circumstances, or did some people feel that IS 40 and IFRS 3 were mutually exclusive, and that separate issue was what we are addressing or trying to address here, and not the other bigger issue about when have you got a business or not, which is something that we'd bring back at a future meeting. This one is just to do with the issue about what do you need to do? Do you need to apply both IAS 40 and, if you've got a business, also IFRS 3?
Okay, let's break the pattern and go this way. Andrew, then Joanna, then Andrew, Faylong, Joanna, Scott.
Well, just reflecting on what Michael said, I guess we run the risk of reopening last time's debate. I don't really feel that strongly about this, but I don't think it's going to do much to solve divergence in practice. I kind of think I'd rather wait till all the other, you know, outreach is undertaken to work out on a more broader basis what we mean by definition of a business. And similar to the point that Laurence made, it's kind of odd to say in one standard, IAS 40, by the way, don't forget about the business combinations, you might have a business combination, when you don't say that in other standards, like PP&E, insurance contracts, leases. So it kind of feels a bit odd. Do I have a major problem? No, but I'd rather do nothing until we can work out what a business is. Come
on.
First, I agree with the presentation to make amendment through annual improvement for project cycle, because the IFRS 3 we soon have a policy implementation. It's easier to clarify through IAS 40 instead. But I think the committee may go further than what the staff did in the paper, because in this staff paper it only states the IFRS 3 and IAS 40 are not mutually exclusive. It just like Lauren said, it leaves some open for some opportunities for diversity. Actually, the main issue on diversity is because the U.S. has developed practice from SEC interpretation, and that said the investment property is a business, but why some other IFRS country is not. So the committee should take on the question directly or clarify whether an investment property is a business or not. So
I think one of the problems we had last time was the answer to that question is maybe. All of us could visualize some kinds of investment properties that would be and some that wouldn't. And so that's at least the problem that we had. Joanna?
I have to admit, and I had some discussion with Thomas during the month on this, and so, if you like, supported where this is at. But listening to the comments, I mean, I certainly believe the issue of the mutual exclusivity, if you like, or non, that this addresses that. But if it's not going to solve the diversity, because the diversity is it a business, then maybe it, as Andrew says, maybe it's not worth doing. I mean, because this is perhaps only addressing a very small part of the issue, and if we actually come to the agenda criteria, perhaps it doesn't meet it from what you're all saying for this particular issue, that the bigger issue is, will it ever meet, or does it meet the definition of a business combination? So I'm supportive. I hear some of the comments that Laurence says as well in terms of if we do go this way about changing the words. If we are going to do it, I would leave it where it is, I think, probably. But I'm not going to die in a ditch. But I think I have to admit the bigger question is, do we do anything now, if that's not really what the diversity is actually all about?
Scott?
In general, I support the draft that the staff has presented. I have a few minor wording suggestions, but they're nothing to lose sleep over. I do think it's worth doing this. The diversity, there is a lot of diversity just in general. You know, present all kinds of fact patterns. There's a lot of judgment involved, and it's kind of hard to make these decisions. But with respect to investment properties, the issue of IAS 40's scope is adding to the difficulty in people resolving the diversity. That is to say, you know, this is a standard. We got the same definition in U.S. GAAP, and people versed in U.S. GAAP are looking at investment property type fact patterns differently than people versed in IFRS because of IAS 40. And so I do think that this will be helpful in eliminating one of the causes of people being unable to reach conclusions. Certainly with this out of the way, this clarified, there's still going to be a lot of discussion and debate about what's a business and what isn't. But based on what I've seen, when you're not in investment property, the discussion is, you know, kind of a good back and forth. People are weighing different characteristics. And different people could reach different conclusions, but everybody kind of understands why it's going. But when it's an investment property, the discussions that happen are IAS 40, done, go away. And this removes that piece of the debate so that we can get into the substantive analysis of whether we've got a business or not.
Guido and then Ruth.
As I said before, that from my point of view, that was not the discussion. It is not that they are mutually exclusive. And let me give you an example that everybody can read in the standard. In paragraph 13, it says that even if you have significant ancillary services, like when you're buying a hotel, but they have been outsourced, it might be an investment property. Nobody would say, oh, it's investment property, no business. If I'm buying a hotel, even if the significant ancillary services are outsourced, it's a business. So again, what I'm saying here is I think we could spare our time because this will not solve the diversity in practice. Again, I mean, we could write it in. It wouldn't do any harm, but it wouldn't also not help anybody.
Ruth?
I think it does help. I think it helps. There is certainly confusion about the distinction between investment property and owner-occupied versus definition of a business. And so I think the staff's wording definitely does help. I agree with Laurence to delete the second paragraph of BC1A, because I think that's superfluous. We don't need it. So I think this will help somewhat. I don't think it can do any harm. It certainly doesn't solve the bigger issue of what is a business, but we agreed, to be fair to the staff, we agreed at the last meeting that we weren't going to try to deal with that and we were going to refer it to the board. So I think the staff has done what we asked them to do. And I support what they've done.
Okay. Let me phrase it this way. Does anyone object, subject to editorial changes, to going ahead as the staff has described? And that would include all three questions, transition, and seeing no objections, we will take it as read. Sarah?
No, not an objection. I just have a question. Why is it proposed to be in the 2011 through 13 annual improvement cycle as opposed to like the other ones we have that are 2010 to 12?
Okay, the 2010 to 12 exposure draft we're planning to publish in December, and for anything to get into that, it would need to be going to the board in November, and we've passed the board cutoff date now for anything to go to the next board meeting. So it just slips into the next one. Are you saying that we've got some papers suggesting that it's, okay, well, that's a typo then in those other papers. Those will also slip into the next one. So we've got an ED coming out in December, all being well, and then another one in sort of July, August time. So this would go into the July or August exposure draft.
Okay, so agenda paper 7, that'll be an 11 through 13 as well, even though it says 10. Okay, I just didn't understand why this one was going to be next year and the rest were. Okay,
good catch.
Cool. Awesome.
Okay, we are ahead of schedule.
Okay.
Thank you. We can do one of two things. We can either take a break now, we can do cash flows and then take a break before the administrative, or we can do one of three things. We can press right through and finish them all. What's your break? Back at 5 till?